listening to It's a New Day on 11 WFYL, working for your liberty. You can call in at 610-539-TALK. That's 610-539-TALK or 1-877-667-1180. That's 1-877-667-1180. Mike Levin's here, and we're looking at the developments in Baltimore. Now, get this. This is the big question. Okay? The big question. Did officers have the right to chase Gray in the first place? That's from the CNN article. That's the big debate now, apparently. Did the officers have the right to chase Gray in the first place? I don't know how many times, for whatever reason, and what we still don't know, the police stopped and got out and approached Gray for a particular reason. Maybe he was looking suspicious. Maybe he was in a bad part of town where there's known, and that's probably a given, but there's known drug activity, maybe a street corner, who knows? We don't even know that yet. What we do know is that when police officers got out and approached him, he ran. And that's not suspicious. Why? I don't run away from police in the street, do you? I mean, unless there is some kind of irrational kind of a paranoia. Now, I know that the African American community, in a lot of ways, and very sensitive to this, okay, that they are convinced, a lot of them, some of them, not all, but in a lot of ways, convinced that police are targeting them. And that is the real feeling of the African-American community. Now, again, that, I think, has more to do with crime rates, the breakdown of the family. Because when the family breaks down, you have an increase in crime rates and drug use and alcohol use, single parents. And that rate is the highest in the African-American community. I think that that's the real reason. Because the crime rates in the African-American community are higher as well. So, but there's this animosity, though, between police and the African-American community that is being pressed on like a hot button. And again, what really gets me angry are different news outlets like CNN, who put on the front page of their website, lynch mob, with these protesters. And all they're trying to do is get views because they are a news agency on the decline, quite frankly. If they're not declining, they're definitely not popular. I mean, I told you the other day, as far as cable news goes, Fox News outranks CNN, MSNBC, HLN, all of them put together. So this is just because that's how they make their money. They have to get viewers. They have to get people clicking. And they go ahead and put sensational headlines and try to spin stories in a sensational way just to get people to watch, to listen, to click. And that's how they could pay their sponsors. That's how the business works. That's how our business works. It's a matter of, okay, are you going to do honest reporting? Are you going to have a unbiased opinion, or at least try? Are you going to try to just stick to the facts, or are you going to try to sensationalize and create a deeper division in our country instead of trying to heal it? And we're going to get to our scripture of the day, which addresses just that in just a moment. But let's keep on looking at this article here. This is from CNN.com. Now, the choice of words said to be not only ironic, but it's sad, as Andrew O'Connell, an attorney for Gray's family. Let's keep reading a little farther down. Quote, and in context of the powder keg that Baltimore City is right now, referring to the citizens of Baltimore City who are peacefully protesting as a lynch mob, doesn't serve to keep the peace. And he is right. It only heightens the flames, or fans the flames, of people who are already on edge. Gray died Sunday, 1 week after he was arrested by Baltimore police. At some point, he suffered a severe spinal cord injury. His family said his voice box was crushed and his neck snapped before he slipped into a coma and later died. That's the real story. How did that happen? While Baltimore police say five of the six officers involved in the arrest have provided statements to investigators, the department has not released details of what the officer said or how Gray might have suffered the fatal injury. More protests to come. Two rallies are scheduled for Thursday in Baltimore, one at noon and one at 3 p.m. They will follow a series of demonstrations this week with protesters demanding elusive answers. Among questions, did something happen inside the police transport vehicle that caused Gray's fatal injury? And what took place in the 30 minutes before police called paramedics to pick up Gray? Now, I can imagine that the assumption is that for that somehow the police roughed him up in the van or something like that. And that's because when you ask a question like that, did something happen inside the police transport vehicle that caused Gray's fatal injury? Well, what could have happened? Honestly. Now, CNN did bring on, they did bring on a doctor to kind of give us some more insight into the spinal cord injury. 80% of his spinal cord was severed, okay? And they brought this doctor on, and they're still trying to spin the story, but he's sitting there and talking to them and going, well, what could have happened is not the spinal cord got directly affected at first, but it could have been broken vertebrae. And that could have also included the voice box being crushed. And then maybe he was put in the van. The van could have been driving. Maybe it hit a bump, and all maybe would have taken was a jostle. This is, again, from the doctor CNN had on their cable program. That maybe he just got jostled once, and the broken vertebrae then severed 80% of the spinal cord. That's a possibility. So it could have been something as simple as a bump. And he said the reason for that would have been that his neck was not properly stabilized. And that's key. That's a key part of this story. His neck was not properly stabilized. If it was, possibly it could have been averted. But we're going to have to see as the evidence comes out. And what took place in 30 minutes before police called paramedics to pick up Gray. And again, kind of being the advocate here for the police, they get this kind of stuff all the time where someone says, oh, my arm, or this or that, and they have to make a split-second decision as to whether, okay, is this really a serious medical case, or is he just trying to, basically just cry wolf? And they have to make that decision on the spot. And then, of course, the question, did officers have the right to chase Gray in the first place? Well, if he runs away from police when he's simply approached, that's suspicious, don't you think? Gray's family attorney and protesters claim police didn't have any probable cause to chase him, but did so only because he was running while black. I'm sorry, if a white guy ran when police approached him, if he ran away from them, I'm sure that there would be somewhat of a chase, because usually police are approaching you not because they usually want to say hi. They're approaching you because you're doing something suspicious, you're in some place that you shouldn't be, or they have questions about something that happened. And if they know that you're connected to any of those three and you run away, they're going to give chase. Has anyone thought of that? Quote, there is a Supreme Court case that states that if you are in a high crime area and you flee from the police unprovoked, the police have the legal ability to pursue you, and that's what they did. That was Baltimore Police Union attorney Michael Davey telling reporters Wednesday. In this type of an incident, you do not need probable cause to arrest. You just need a reasonable suspicion to make the stop. And that's what happened. Gray was arrested after police found what they said was a switchblade on him. An attorney for Gray's family has said the knife was a pocket knife of legal size. It's a pocket knife that's also spring-loaded. Baltimore police have released the names of the six officers involved, and we read those yesterday. You could look them up if you'd like. But the department said it will not release personnel records or photos because doing so would violate the law. We're going to have to head to a break. His leg looked broke. That's in the video. One of the bystanders shouts. We're going to get into that and what the implications of that. And then we've got more coming your way right here on 1180 WFYL, working for your liberty. It's a new day.
Freedom shining light from Philly to the nations. 1180 shining forth, we are the Freedom Station. WFYL.
Good morning, and this is Accelerating Your Business, a weekly call-in radio program that takes place every Thursday morning from 7:34 to 8 a.m. Eastern Standard Time. My name is Michelle Faustin. I am the creator and host of Accelerating Your Business and also president and CEO of MJS Strategy. That is a growth strategy and business expansion consulting firm. So that's just a fancy way of saying I help companies grow and figure out how to expand and do so profitably. This show is designed for business owners, aspiring business owners, managers and executives, so all ages and backgrounds, to provide a platform to answer any questions that you might have in terms of, you know, your business, in terms of something you're doing or you want to do. It's a great soundboard. We've been doing this now for a couple of months and been very pleased by the number of calls we've gotten over these last several weeks and the type of questions they ask, and we hope that you can join us as well. So for those who are seeking to call in, you can call us at 610-539-8255 or 610-539-TALK. You can also call us at 877-667. That's 1180. That's 877-667-1180. You can also email me at askmichelle at 1180wfyl.com. That's askmichelle at 1180wfyl.com. And that's an email address that you can actually not just email today during our show, but you can also email any other time during the week. And for any questions that I receive, I will definitely read those emails, take them, and then discuss them on the air. So if you don't have an opportunity to listen to us live, then you have an opportunity to do so as well. But for those of you who are listening live and do have a pressing business question, please call in. The way that this works, this is for the new people as well as for those who are consistent listeners, is that, you know, when you have a business question, you can call in any time. In between that, I actually go over a topic every week. It is a new topic, and I try to recap, for example, a series that we are part of right now. So the series that we're now in part of now, is called Know Your Numbers and Knowing Your Numbers and the Importance of knowing those important numbers for your business. Or again, if you're an aspiring business owner, the type of numbers that you will need to know and the things that you will need to calculate before you go into business so that you set yourself up for success. So as I am talking, when callers call in, I will gladly interrupt and pause and allow them to ask their business questions. So first, let's do a brief recap, as I'm trying to do every week, in terms of some of the topics we've already went over in past weeks under the Knowing Your Numbers. So we went over revenue and understanding how to break that out in terms of price times quantity, price in terms of understanding what type of business you want to be, if you want to be high value, high price, kind of mid-range or low price. We also talked about quantity and the importance of understanding that as well. So again, it's something very simple, it seems like price times quantity, but obviously when you're digging in, it can get very, very complicated and nuanced. But, you know, with the quantity part, understanding how much you want and how much you need to break even, that's a term we discussed before, as well as what you need to get to that next level, and then also how much you can handle. Again, a lot of times companies may say that they want to grow bigger and they want to do better, but when it comes down to the existing infrastructure or when it comes down to the existing funding, they actually can't get to that next level. You know, a lot of times I talk about the business shows I love to watch, which are The Profit on CNBC and Shark Tank and things, and shows of those that caliber. And what you find when you listen to those shows is that a lot of times they're asking business owners the same type of questions, or they're really trying to make sure that they have what they need. oftentimes at Shark Tank, people will come on and they'll have an invoice or they'll have a purchase order, and they say they just need money because they want to fulfill the purchase order, but they don't have right now what they need to do so, and they need that to get to the next level or to buy inventory or something of that nature. So, you know, understanding that even though it's a show and these people are coming in for that funding, you know, if you look ahead of time and you try to do your analytics and you review your business beforehand to really get a better understanding of, you know, what it will take to reach certain quantities beforehand, and it can help you more in terms of your planning, in terms of your financing, and maybe in terms of managing your money going forward. We also talk a lot about marketing and the type of marketing that needs to take place, whether that's online or traditional or segmented, as a subset of customer acquisition costs, which is pretty much what it costs to acquire a new customer, as well as, you know, how long you get that customer. It's almost like what is also the lifetime value of the customer, so that you can figure out, you know, not just how much it costs to get a new one, but once you do get a new customer, what does that translate in terms of your top-line revenue and bottom-line profitability? So, you know, really understanding both of those. Because, again, sometimes people believe every customer is a good customer. Sometimes that's the case. Sometimes it's not, right? Because at the end of the day, you want to be profitable. But also, too, you know, you may have a longer-term play. So sometimes some customers, let's say the initial set or the onset, they may not look as attractive, or they don't look profitable when you do your numbers. But if you look at lifetime value, which is, again, over the horizon, you realize that sometimes it may make sense to actually just kind of stick with certain customers, because over time they will actually bring you profitability. And, of course, you want to give to them as well. You should never run a business where you just take from someone or you leverage off what they have. It should always be a win-win in anything that you do, so that you as an organization are growing and advancing, but then also as a customer or an affiliate or a vendor or whatever the partnership or relationship might be, you want to make sure that they benefit as well. So it shouldn't be something one-sided, because when both parties benefit, you not only have goodwill, but that goodwill typically translate into finances and profitability on both sides, and then that gives you what you can have to create and secure a long-lasting relationship. Whereas, unfortunately, oftentimes people may sometimes just look one-sided or look what they may get out of a customer, and you may think very much short-term, but then, you know, in the end, it's not something that benefits you. So you always want to be thinking about looking at those numbers, establishing those relationships, and trying to get those good customers for, again, long-term, long value, or those vendors and suppliers, anyone else that you're working with to get there. So today, one of the other numbers, the metrics I wanted to briefly discuss, is to go over industry metrics, right? So we talked about some of the very high-level ones, but understanding what are the important metrics for your industry is something that will greatly help you. And when I say by industry metrics, it doesn't have to be so high-level or so big. You can look at that as a small business owner as well. So something as simple as if you're in retail and you are selling retail, then one of the numbers that you should know for your business is how much sales per square foot you are currently generating. You know, that's not something that someone who's not in retail is necessarily going to look for, because that may not be applicable to their business. But really understanding, you know, how much you're generating is important, because when you're looking to see what size store you have, when you're looking to, let's say, compare to other stores to see if you're operating at the top end or the low end, if you're on the mid end, if you're operating efficiently or not, you know, if you ever want to look at any type of industry report or even local business report on what those numbers should be, you know, being able to track what those numbers are. So what you have, let's say, initially, and again, I use the same example, the retail store, what you have originally, and then, you know, you want to see whether or not that number is progressing over time. Also, it's something that, you know, again, we talk a lot about funding here, because that is something that you need for any business. But, you know, you also want to take a look at, you know, whether or not, if you do decide to go ahead and try to obtain funding, whether that's from an investor or whether that's from a bank, these are the type of numbers that you're going to need to know, because this is the type of information they're going to be looking at in addition to anything about you and your management team and other aspects of your business before making a decision. So understanding how to do that is extremely important, and how to track it and knowing that you need to have it and track it is very important. So to give an example of a retail store, you know, another metric that oftentimes is very important for certain companies, let's say in the technology field, is revenue per employee. And the reason why that metric is important is because it's not a standalone brick-and-mortar type of business. And so in that particular business, it's very, the fancy word is labor-intensive. And all that means is it requires a lot of people and a lot more of the people side to generate revenue than it actually does hard goods and services. So being able to take a look and being able to review that number is very critically important in terms of that as well, because this way you'll be able to see, well, okay, so the people that I'm bringing on, and again, it's a technology company, so it's everything from your engineers, your admins, to anything else. Anyone that you're bringing on, you want to see how much revenue they're actually generating. So being able to look at that metric is also, again, very important because it'll help you to track what you need in terms of your development piece, in terms of how much you're putting into the company from that perspective, as well as, you know, what you're doing in terms of how many employees maybe you should have. So you might be at a place where you've been hiring too much and you may decide you want to slow down a bit until that number goes up. Or you may decide that you actually need to hire more, you know, in order to kind of reach those goals. Or, of course, the great scenario is if you realize that you're at a good level in terms of the employees that you currently have and you are merely just taking an average of both in terms of, you know, where you're at. So, you know, after the break, we will actually resume. For those, again, who want to call in, please call at 610-539-8255. That's 610-539-TALK. Or 877-667-1180. I will resume this and look forward to speaking with you after the break. Hi, everyone, and thank you for joining us. Again, this is Accelerating Your Business, a weekly call-in business radio program designed to be a platform to help you as a business owner, aspiring business owner, or executive, answer any pressing business questions that you have. As I mentioned before the break, we are discussing a topic in between callers calling in. This week's topic is really it's part of our Knowing Your Numbers series and the importance of really understanding and knowing the numbers that you need to have, you need to look at for your business or organization. So we have a caller, so we're going to take this caller now. And I'm sorry, what is the person's name? Arnie. Okay, well, I look forward to speaking to Arnie. Arnie, are you there?
My name is Bonnie with a B.
Hi, Arnie. How are you? Can you speak up a little bit, Arnie? I can hardly hear you.
Bonnie.
Okay, great. Now, what is your business question?
Yeah, I have a rental tool business, and when I got into business about 30 years ago, I had about a big business, but now the Home Depots and the Lowe's, they kind of intruded on my business, I guess you could say. Excuse me. And, you know, my business is going down a lot, and I wanted to know, what would your advice as far as tool rentals to improve my sales?
Okay, if you can just clarify. So what kind of business are you in? You said a rental business?
Yeah, lawnmowers.
Equipment rentals.
Yeah.
Okay. Now, do you are these rentals that you currently rent to individuals, like homeowners, or do you do it to businesses?
Homeowners.
Homeowners. Okay. So you say you've been in business 30 years, and
yes.
One of the things that you do is rent out this equipment, and you've been doing. But you said your business has actually declined over the years.
Yes, yeah, the big chain stores, Lowe's, Home Depot, they do the same thing now.
Okay, and you're saying that you want to figure out a way on how to regenerate your business, your existing business, or you want to do something else at this point?
No, I would like to continue doing it. And, you know, I have a reliable customer base, but I want to grow it.
Okay. All right, so you still have your strong customer base, but you realize when they have this competition. Well, let me ask you one other question before I answer it. You know, how are you in terms of price? So you said that Lowe's and Home Depot currently offer the same type of service now, which is true. They do provide rentals on certain equipment, especially very expensive equipment. But, you know, how do you fare in terms of price?
About the same price. I guess the one difference is I don't do credit cards.
All right, and you currently serve people in what market, what area?
Lower Pennsylvania.
Lower Pennsylvania, okay. And you said that you'd like, so you haven't, you said your business has been reducing and you'd like to see your business grow. Okay.
Uh-huh.
Well, this is what I'd suggest that you do. I guess in any business, you know, when you have a business model, right, or you have a way of doing business, which is the easy way of seeing it, you always want to also pay attention to the competitive landscape. We talked about that, I think probably in week two or week three of the show, as well as, you know, what's going on in the changing marketplace, right, the changing market. So I would say this, a couple things. First, you know, take a look at what customers you have been able to retain, even though you said your business has gone down some. You know, take a look at that. And, you know, when you want to find out if, you know, the numbers that went down, the customers that you've been able to keep, are there because of you know, just because they've had the relationship over the years, or are they there because if they have a certain other level of trust? If, you know, you said that your prices are the same, but we don't really go through terms, you know, in terms of, you know, how long you may allow them to leave the equipment if you don't charge them, let's say, extra charges. So, for example, for a lawnmower, you might charge them a rental price, but you may not charge them for the gas, you know, that goes in the, and maybe Home Depot's and Lowe's does. I mean, something like that, just to get clues, at least from what you're currently doing with your current customers in terms of that. Two, one of the things that I would do is I would look in terms of how you've been advertising and promoting your business now. Because the truth of the matter is that even though Home Depot and Lowe's do offer some of these services, it's my experience, my limited experience, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, but my limited experience is that they don't typically offer the service on a wide range of appliances or items. Like, it's certain items that they'll provide rentals on, but not all. So, you know, you may want to take a look to see, well, what, you know, items you provide rentals on that Home Depot and Lowe's don't currently, and then you can kind of differentiate yourself that way, so that you're actually offering, you know, different types of products to maybe a new potential, you know, customer base or a new segment who you haven't been serving, or even to your existing customer base, you know, you kind of let them know that you actually, you know, have a competitive advantage because you're taking on the, I would say, the risk, but also, you know, the ability to provide them with a lot more than, let's say, like I said, Lowe's and Home Depot is doing. Also, you know, you have the benefit of the fact that you are, it sounds like a small business, or at least you're the owner, so you can give a more personal touch than definitely, you know, those bigger and larger stores can do, right? So you want to be able to, you know, reach out to your customers, you know, kind of give them, like, small things, you know, anticipate their needs, different things that those large stores wouldn't necessarily do. They'll take the order, they'll rent out the equipment, they'll make sure that, you know, it comes back in the right condition, but they typically won't do anything beyond that. So you have that advantage in terms of being able to leverage that. And for those customers who appreciate that and need that, that's something that you can definitely provide to them. So I think those two would be very helpful. And then the third thing is really maybe looking a little bit bigger. I mean, you say right now that you just work with homeowners, and again, I don't know exactly how much equipment you have and things of that nature, but you might want to look into reaching out to small businesses in your area or even other areas, you know, depending on how far you want to go in terms of delivery of items. But, you know, they may have a greater need on a more consistent basis than your homeowners, even for certain things. It could be a lawnmower. Now, granted, they may hire a landscaping service, but then you may want to think there, right? If you have lawnmowers, instead of just selling direct to an individual, you know, for certain landscaping businesses that maybe during certain times of the year they get more business, they may look to renting certain models versus owning everything. and that may help their cost with someone who's a startup, with someone young, you know, who doesn't have a lot of capital, renting at first before they have enough to buy, you know, the equipment that they need is something that can actually help them in terms of their business as well. So, you know, you can definitely look for other ways to generate more business and start reversing the trend and grow more business as well. But, again, you might just have to, you know, again, one, like I mentioned earlier, look to better ways that you can leverage what you already have. But then, two, you know, look for the strengths that you have versus these other big people and look for different markets and different customers to serve. And I think that will definitely help you to not just reverse the trend, but hopefully get to that next level and another point because now you're going to be looking at your business in a different way. But also congrats to you on being in business 30 years. That's amazing. I think any business owner would be happy to hear that. So does that answer your question?
It does. And do you think I should offer credit card services as well?
Oh, so currently right now you just offer
cash,
you know, only your customers can only pay you in cash?
Or check.
Oh, okay, cash or check. Okay. Well, yes, if you're not offering an ability for them to pay via credit card, I would definitely say that that's something you should implement as well. It's very, very easy to do. You can do it online very easily. There's a lot of companies, especially PayPal and others, where you can literally just set up that function online. Also, they have other items, and most of the time they can send to you for free. And I know PayPal does it, and some other companies do it as well, where it's almost like a little slider that you can put on your phone to do it. So you can definitely implement that too. Okay. Well, I hope I answered your question. Well, we're out of time. Thank you all so much for listening into Accelerating Your Business. We will be back next week, Thursday, at 7:30, 4 to 8 a.m. You guys have a wonderful day.